Recapping Tuesday's action here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. It is Wednesday, April 6th. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White and Al Melchior. My goodness, Noah Syndergaard was amazing yesterday. Trevor Story, 3 home runs in his first 2 games. Second player since 1900 to do that. And much, much more, including some bullpen implosions. Good morning, Alan Scott. What's going on?
Morning, Adam. I think this is the first time it's just been Al and I on a podcast in weeks.
Yeah, my first regular season podcast of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Al's,
I've been back in extended spring training.
Yeah. We save Al for late in the week. He's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday kind of guy. Yesterday we got nerdy with Heath and Chris. Tomorrow Heath, Chris, and Al. A lot of stats going to be thrown around. But, you know, we don't have the longest show scheduled today, so I don't know how long it's going to last. So let's get into the action. Actually, today should be great. Juan Nicasio is pitching. There are a few pitchers on the mound that looking forward to seeing Patrick Corbin taking on this juggernaut Rockies lineup. But anyway, yesterday, guys, I think we should start with Noah Syndergaard. Jaw-dropping. 6 scoreless innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts at the Royals, who do not strike out. Woo! Pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, he'll be great until he can't pitch anymore, right? Or until he gets hurt?
Yeah.
You sticking with that story?
No, look, the concerns I have about Syndergaard aren't going to manifest in the first start. I just, you know, there was a huge innings jump last year, so it's concerning.
I love those reactions from any player any of us has said anything about that stood out to people, positive or negative. If they do the opposite of that, our Twitter timelines are just filled with all sorts of shade.
I got spared. I don't even know if people remembered. But yeah, I was worried about Syndergaard's innings, definitely. However, I still am. But that was regardless. I mean, wow. That was really eye-opening. I mean, you try not to overreact from one start. Am I overreacting, or was this as impressive as I'm making it out to be?
No, I'm just giving you grief. No, not an overreaction at all. I mean, it was a great start. Like you said, 9 strikeouts against the Royals. You got to pay attention pretty much any time that happens.
And I saw this cool stat from Jason Stark. 6 of his strikeouts were on the slider. He only had 11 on a slider all last year. So the Worthen slider strikes again.
Gives up a leadoff triple to Alcides Escobar and then strikes out the side. How about Trevor Story? Unless, is there anything else you guys want to say about Noah Syndergaard?
Nah, he's good.
All right. How about this? With this little foot injury, if you own Madison Bumgarner and somebody offered you Noah Syndergaard today, accept or reject?
I gotta reject. As good as Syndergaard is and can be, Bumgarner was my pick for NL Cy Young. I'm gonna stick with the faith in Mad Bum this early in the season.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, Trevor Story. Wow, 3 home runs in 2 games. Who's pumped?
I'm pumped. All right, there. Okay, we're going to talk about a lot of performances today. I'm sure you talked about a lot yesterday with Chris and Heath. But, you know, we're dealing with such a small sample size that it's hard to really pinpoint any player who has honestly changed his value. I can only think of 2 in all of baseball who've changed their value since the start of the season, and that's Aroldis Vizcaíno, who now appears to be the favorite for saves in Atlanta, and that's more of a role thing. And Trevor Story, with these 3 home runs in his first 2 games, really just picking up where he left off in spring training. And he hasn't even played a game in Colorado yet, you know?
Yeah.
The main reason we were excited about him being a fantasy asset. So, I mean, I can only move him so high in my rankings because of the Jose Reyes situation and that looming over us all. But Story is looking like a guy you have to have in your lineup until he gives you a reason not to have him in your lineup.
But what should the Story owner do right now? Should he, because ideally Story owner has another shortstop. I don't know if you drafted just Trevor Story. You were planning on worst case scenario with Jose Reyes, his return looming at some point. Should the Trevor Story owner look to trade Story high? Should he look to buy Jose Reyes as a backup? Like, what would you do if you own Story?
I own a Story in 2 leagues. I'm holding for now, but I am reminded of last season when I had some players, who I got very late. Jake Marisnyk is one that comes to mind, who got off to an insane start in April and I just bought into it. And then he lost his starting role. So, and Story, of course, could likely lose his for entirely different reasons. So I don't want to wait too long. But I think I got to let this play out a little bit with Trevor Story.
That's a good point.
And the Reyes situation's a different one, too. I mean, I still don't know how long he's going to be out. Right. I mean, it could be a month, it could be less, it could be a lot more.
You know, Scott, mm-hmm. you can't get Chris Towers and Heath Cummings to react to a small sample size. Like, I knew I wasn't going to get anything from them yesterday about Trevor Story after one game.
See, I wondered, I didn't listen to it, but I wondered if they had some kind of extreme negative reaction to Madison Bumgarner, and that inspired the trade in one of our podcast leagues that I think we could all agree was not very good for the Bumgarner owner.
Wait, what was the trade?
It was Madison Bumgarner for Shelby Miller and Gio Gonzalez.
That was in our 16-team league, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I don't, I mean.
I thought maybe they had something that inspired, they said something that inspired that.
No, we talked about the foot. We talked about the foot, you know, but nothing to the point of trade him for Shelby Miller and Gio Gonzalez. No.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and you know what really bugged me about that is not, you know, if you want to trade Madison Bumgarner, that's your prerogative. But no matter what format you're playing in, he's one of your two or three best players. You don't take the first offer that comes your way. He put him on the block, and then 2 hours later, he was trading him. It's like,
yeah,
you know, this is a player every single owner in the league is going to want. Field a few offers. What's the hurry?
Yeah, better ways to make a trade, certainly. And I get in a 16-team league trading one player for two players. It's kind of the opposite of, you know, 10-team league trade two for one and get the best player. In 16-team leagues, you want to trade for two usable players for one. I get it, but that's just not a good enough haul. It doesn't look like right now, anyway, a good enough haul for Bumgarner. What else stood out to you guys on Tuesday? Busy day in baseball.
Aaron Sanchez, because I did not see that coming at all. Spent the whole month of March telling people don't get hyped up about Sanchez, even in leagues where he can use him in a relief slot. And then he goes and he does this against the Rays. 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, no walks, a bunch of ground balls, which that part you expect from Sanchez, but the great control. I think he had 15 swings and misses.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have a start last year with more than 10.
Mm-hmm.
My early take on this, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the Pitch FX deep drill down to see what else I can learn about this start. But my early take on this is that this is at least partially line matchup driven, because the Rays have become a pretty impatient team starting the second half last year and carrying over through these first games this year. Obviously, we're dealing with small sample theater here, but they are far and away the team that's swinging at pitches outside the zone the most in the early going here, and they were pretty impatient late last year. And so maybe Sanchez's strikeout and whip totals were a little inflated given the matchup.
Maybe. But I will point out he had 19 strikeouts to 3 walks in 20 innings this spring. So, like with Trevor Story, seems like he just carried that over. He has a legit breaking ball now, or at least seems to. That's something he didn't have before. And I watched the video of this, the fastball itself, and you know, it probably becomes more effective with the breaking ball, but the fastball itself looks pretty awesome. A lot of rising action on that. 96 miles per hour. Sanchez may be a third name I have to include on that list of players who have honestly changed their value, because I think he went from kind of fringy to must-own with this start.
Yeah, and he's only 63% owned, Aaron Sanchez. He's RP eligible, but even if you can't use him as a relief pitcher, we shouldn't overreact, because what Al said was about the Rays chasing. I mentioned the stat that ESPN had in Marcus Stroman's start. The Rays, Marcus Stroman got more swings out of the strike zone percentage-wise than any start he'd had in his career. A higher percentage of swings out of the strike zone in that start against the Rays a couple days ago than he had in any start in his career. But yeah, I watched too last night, and it does seem like Aaron Sanchez is more of a pitcher now with more of an arsenal, because unfortunately Brooks Baseball doesn't have the breakdown of what he threw last night, but last year he threw a four-seam fastball, a sinking fastball, a cutting fastball, and an occasional, maybe 10-11% of the time, curveball. So pretty much fastball, and he was pitching in relief for the most part, but it looked like Sanchez has changed things a little bit. So I mean, that was a guy that we can't sit here and say he's going to be great, but that was a guy that I looked at every single league to make sure he was owned, and he was, unfortunately, or I would have picked him up.
Yep, and that's the kind of things you have to monitor this time of year. not all your pickups are going to work out. In fact, it's fair to say the majority won't. But, you know, if the last guy you drafted on your bench was like a Rich Hill or honestly, even somebody like Jose Reyes with the uncertain timetable and Trevor Story kind of cementing himself in that role as much as a player can through two games, I'd be willing to spare that guy and see where this goes with Sanchez.
Owners might be forced to look at like a Tyler Glass now or a Lucas Giolito on their bench or a Jose Berrios and say, am I dropping them for Aaron Sanchez? Am I dropping them for even a guy who wasn't quite as good, but for the Brewers last night, Jimmy Nelson, sorry. You know, would you make those moves?
Yes, I would. I mean, Tyler Glass now and Giolito, you're going to want them when they come up, but it may not be till June, and I don't know. I have a feeling they're going to change hands a few times before, depending on the depth of your league. I'm speaking, of course, to the standard 12 teams or fewer mixed league. And they're probably going to change hands a few times.
Not a keeper league, obviously, we're talking here. Yeah. How about you, Al? Would you drop those studs for anybody that you've seen so far?
I would do it for Sanchez at this point. But my first option that I would go to would be the type that Scott was describing initially. If I've got somebody who's pretty, you know, fringy or just kind of steady and dependable but not spectacular, I'd rather drop that player and be able to keep a Giolito and somebody like Sanchez at the same time. That would be my preference. But push comes to shove, I'd drop somebody like Giolito for Sanchez right now.
Well, here are some other pitchers that pitched yesterday that might be available. Andrew Heaney is 65% owned. Now, 6 innings, 4 runs isn't great, but he did strike out 7 batters. Unfortunately, they were Cubs, and the Cubs are going to strike out a lot. But Heaney and Sanchez are owned in about the same amount of leagues. Then you've got Jimmy Nelson, and really I think those are the big three that are owned in less than 70% of leagues that went yesterday. How would you rank those three? Heaney, Sanchez, Nelson?
The opposite. Sanchez, Nelson, Heaney.
Yep.
Sanchez, Nelson, Heaney. Okay, good to know. Other standouts from Tuesday, Carlos Correa looks like he's going to win the MVP for 10 straight years. He homered. He scored. He had 2 steals. He was great. Anybody else stand out to you guys?
Well, on the theme of 2 steals, because anytime a player can get more than one of those in the same game, it's an eye-opener. David Wright had 2. And this is a guy who we used to rely on steals consistently. So I don't think I don't think he's incapable of bouncing back with a high steals total. We saw that from Ryan Braun last year after a couple years going away from it. So that's something to keep an eye on, because if he becomes a 15 to 20 steal guy at third base, he's, you know, even if he's limited to 135 games with that back issue, that's probably going to be starting caliber in a mixed league, and Wright's a guy who's widely available.
And if you're looking for somebody to steal against, Hank Conger threw out 1 base runner. Last year, 1 base stealer. And yesterday, Kevin Pillar and Justin Smoak both stole bases off of Conger.
Because I'm not sure he's going to make your notes, because he wasn't even in the starting lineup. Victor Martinez.
Oh, he made my notes, buddy.
Okay. Well, first at bat of 2016, he homers off a right-hander after being terrible from the left side of the plate last year, likely because of the knee surgery. So,
yeah.
Again, another case of an encouraging development carrying over from spring training into the regular season, because he had several home runs off right-handers this spring as well.
Yeah, well, I do want to point out, so the splits were, Victor Martinez last year did hit 10 home runs off righties, but he hit .219.
Right.
Against lefties, he batted .348, but only 1 home run in 89 at-bats. He did sit yesterday in the NL Park, and Miguel Cabrera did not play third base. So, looks like the likelihood of Cabrera earning third base eligibility, gaining third base eligibility, not so good. But either way, Victor Martinez does homer in a crazy, crazy game that featured a blown save. And I originally thought A.J. Ramos struck out the side when he pitched in the 10th inning. But no, he actually walked 3 batters, not struck out 3 batters. Just didn't give up a run. Al, anything else stand out to you on Tuesday? Or shall we move on?
Let's see. Well, Francisco Rodriguez.
Yeah, let's do the bullpen. Let's do the bullpen.
Yeah.
What's a red flag for you guys? K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez. One inning, four hits, three runs at Miami, three swinging strikes in 19 pitches, zero ground balls. And he only blew two saves in 40 chances last year. Now he's blown one. Sean Doolittle gave up a home run on a 94-mile-per-hour fastball with two outs and two strikes in the ninth to Jimmy Rollins. And there were some other things in there, but those are the two that stand out. Are there any red flags?
A little bit for K-Rod, and it's way too early for that, for a closer. But this is somebody that I was relying on as a bargain option back in drafts. And, you know, I sort of feared that we might see this sort of thing more this year, you know, as he's getting older and not throwing as hard. But as you mentioned, last year, pretty good year. And so I thought he'd be a little under the radar. But I could see ditching him pretty early if this is a sign of things to come.
It's kind of weird that Sean Doolittle has been used twice in non-save situations, but I don't think we should look too much into that, right, Scott? He's clearly their closer.
Doolittle. Yeah, it was a tie game, right? And, yeah. And it was, what inning was it?
It was the ninth.
Yeah. So.
Oh, right. They were at home
with the games so spaced apart this first week. I don't think it's too odd. You got a few other notes here in the bullpen that I think are interesting. If you want to go through the rest.
Sure. Well, Ramos walked three guys, but it was a scoreless inning against the Tigers. Ken Giles served up a home run. Other than that, he looked good, but he struck out two in one inning, but he gave up a home run in the eighth, and then Gregerson came in and got the save in the ninth. If you're looking for a sort of handcuff to Santiago Casilla, I know Hunter Strickland, pretty popular. For what it's worth, Sergio Romo pitched the eighth in a one-run game, and Casilla got the save. Fernando Rodney threw a scoreless inning in a non-save situation, and Alex Colome came in the eighth inning trailing 2-1 for Tampa Bay. He ended up getting the win. He pitched two innings, gave up three hits, and was pitching with the bases loaded in the ninth and got an inning-ending double play, which we'll talk about in a second. Okay, what stood out to you, Scott?
They did keep him in for what was a save. I mean, it wasn't technically a save situation, but it was a save scenario. It's just he was already in line for the win since he came in for the eighth, and he stayed in to pitch the ninth instead of them bringing in somebody like Farquhar as a closer. And Farquhar hadn't pitched yet in the game, Danny Farquhar. So I interpret this to mean they are leaning toward Alex Colome as their closer, but
I think he came in, they were trailing 2-1.
I know. But why Farquhar is the only other option we were thinking about safe possibility.
In the ninth, when they took the lead, they kept Colome in.
Right.
And they took the lead in the bottom of the eighth, had the lead in the ninth. I gotcha. Okay. Sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
It might be a less than traditional situation like the Braves are going with Aroldis Vizcaíno, you know, just using him in the highest leverage spot, which quite often will be the ninth inning, but not always. I don't know. It's a weird situation, but I think this at least cements that Colome is the Rays reliever to own.
And he's 40% owned. Would you rather own Colome or Vizcaíno?
I'd rather have Vizcaíno.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, we have Boxberger's return at some point. I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday, and you guys weren't on the show, so you can't tell me, but... Speaking of, you know, using your reliever in high leverage situations, that is what Jeff Banister said he was going to do with Sean Tolleson. Said
really?
He might not use him in every safe situation, even though Tolleson is the closer. So I don't know if I buy it, but
I definitely buy it because he was, you know, again, go back to in the postseason where he didn't use, Tolleson in a safe situation, used Sam Dyson and, that definitely gave me the idea that Banister could be a little bit flexible about how he uses those relievers late in games. He's got so many good ones.
Yeah.
I'm a little skeptical of all of these managers who say it, though. I mean, this guy, you know, if that's what's going on with Colome and then in the Tolleson situation, because I think it's easier to kind of stick with that in a small sample scenario where I just think over the course of 162 games, you're going to get so worn down by the endless kind of gyrations of managing that bullpen that you're just going to be like, okay, whatever. Let's just use the guy in the ninth inning. I kind of feel like that's the way this is going to go. I don't know if that makes sense, but just kind of like in the situation in the opener where Jason Grilli, this guy, you know, was used in the eighth. Jason Grilli came in the ninth for a save situation and blew it. And that's going to happen enough times that these managers are going to shy away from this approach. That's my kind of hypothesis for how this is going to play out.
I also just kind of feel like if you have that many good relievers, which the Rangers appear to have, then you don't have to put Tolleson in the eighth. Like, you actually, right? I mean, that's, if you had bad relievers, then yeah, okay, fine, I get it. But if you have a,
I'm not sure he's their best reliever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay. Anyway, we still to come to talk about Justin Verlander, Shelby Miller, Shinsu Chu, by the way, speaking of steals, he stole third yesterday, which was cool. And 2 days ago, he had a stolen base called back, I think on like a interference. So looks like he's off and running so far. So that's interesting to know. But a lot more to come. Let's get to your news and notes. By the way, email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. No timetable for AJ Pollock's return. How droppable is AJ Pollock?
Not yet.
Okay.
I need a timetable.
Everybody's got the flu. Zach Greinke pitched Monday with the flu. He had a bad outing. He was sick, apparently. So I guess
you get the flu, and you get the flu.
Yeah.
Hey, not even on the same team.
What do you do when you're Clayton Kershaw, by far the best pitcher in baseball? You add a new pitch. He threw two changeups on Monday. Terrifying. Working on his changeup. All right, so in case you missed it, Jose Bautista was called out in the ninth inning with the bases loaded at this end of the game. He was called out. Yeah,
that's
sorry.
Worth noting, too, in the Colomé discussion. Like, he had blown it.
Well, no, not really, because it was clearly an illegal slide. He got the double play that ended the game, except the throw from Forsyth, who was making the relay throw, was a wild throw, whatever, because... Here comes Jose Bautista sliding into second base, reaches out his hand and kind of grabs Forsythe's leg like, oh yeah, that's totally fine, dude. No problem. Forsythe's throw goes wild, goes array, and the game tying and game winning run score, go ahead run score. But of course they ruled interference on Bautista or whatever the terminology is. Double play was called, game over. John Gibbons pissing and moaning about it after the game, say, what are we supposed to do, wear dresses to the game tomorrow? Ridiculous reaction. Of course you cannot slide into second base, even before these new rules, and grab somebody's leg, you idiot.
No. I think this would have passed before the new rules.
I don't know that it would have.
It wasn't, like, you're kind of overstating the grab. It did definitely look deliberate, him reaching out and touching his leg, but it was really a touch. That's really all he got in.
Well, you can't do that. All right, regardless, because I read on the website, our website this morning, some analysis of it, like, you can't even do that before the new rules.
No, okay.
But that might be more of an opinion thing than a fact.
Yeah, it would have been a judgment call, for sure. And I don't really know how much of it affected Forsythe's throw that caused it to go wild. I think more it was just the slide, which, you know, the slide itself was fine. It was over the bag. Mm-hmm. And but it happened so late before he threw the ball that it caused him to, like, be shifting while he was throwing it. So I don't even think the grab messed it up. I'm just saying Colomé did not pitch well.
Yeah. Okay.
And probably deserved it, and you know, and if this set of circumstances plays out differently, we're talking about him maybe getting a loss instead of a win, and certainly not a save. So that's something to keep in mind with this, too. Colomé is the guy to own, but I don't think he's entirely firmed it up yet.
I just really wanted to yell at John Gibbons because that was a dumb reaction.
Cantankerous manager. That's always a good target.
Lottie Chisenhall expected to start a rehab assignment Thursday. And Matt Garza out at least 4 to 6 weeks with a strained muscle in his back. Milwaukee calling up Tyler Cravey.
That's not
Garza.
The guy to pick up if you were so inclined to pick up a Brewers pitcher who couldn't crack that rotation. That would be Zach Davies.
Zach Davies, okay. NL only. Shane Green got an extra inning save for Detroit last night. He was scheduled to start on Monday. Is Shane Green still scheduled to start on Monday?
I don't know, but I wouldn't see why not. Yeah. Because that's still 5 days away.
Tyler White, day-to-day after being hit by a pitch on the hand. He did not start yesterday. We'll talk about that in a second. Gerrit Cole is going to start Saturday at the Reds. Buster Posey expected a rest today. And Jacob deGrom, we got some nicknames for him, by the way. You guys weren't on the show, but I like deGrom Reaper.
I do too.
I don't see, I don't have a problem with
Rom Reaper.
Yeah. He might not be able to pitch Friday. His wife is expecting a baby. You know, guys, I look at my auction team. I see AJ Pollock. I get annoyed. It bothers me. But you know, you never have to deal with that on FanDuel. That is one of the many things I love about FanDuel, the best place to play your daily fantasy baseball this season. We are going to help you set your lineup on this podcast and on our Daily Fantasy Live podcast hosted by Heath Cummings. But you have to start playing on FanDuel or keep playing on FanDuel if you've already done it. Contests start at $1. You can play in tournaments with large payouts. You can play in contests with more winners, but the smaller payouts, you can double up your money. A lot of options on FanDuel. And there's a special offer right now for new users. Sign up today, enter your first league, and either win a cash prize in that league, or if you don't, FanDuel is going to automatically refund your entry fee. So you're basically getting a free contest here, up to $10 for additional play. So it's refunded up to $10 for additional play. This is your opportunity to take a swing at real cash. If you don't knock it out of the park, you get another pitch. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and sign up with our promo code. That promo code is HOMERUN. That's one word, no spaces. Promo code is home run. Make it happen on FanDuel.com. Speaking of home runs, every day I'm homering. Robinson Cano and Corey Dickerson homering again. They're not getting a lot of hits. They only have two this year, but both have left the ballpark. Discuss.
Yeah, I'm a little more concerned about my Robinson Cano is a bust prediction, and I kind of started to back away from that toward the end of spring training when he hit I had the stats pulled up here. He hit 7 home runs this spring, and some of them were moonshots, and now he's already up to 2 when I think he hit what, like 6 in all the first half last year, and obviously had a monster second half, so If I own Cano, and I don't, because obviously I was letting other people draft him, but if I did for some reason own him in a keeper scenario or whatever, I don't think I'd be looking to trade him right now and sell high. Which I guess means I'm backing away from the bust prediction pretty completely.
Al?
So, all right, we're up to 4 players who have changed value.
I think
we're going to be up to 5.
I mean,
I'm
not really moving Cano in my rankings. If I could draft over again, I wouldn't be so opposed to taking him, I guess, is how I'd put it.
Al, how do you feel about Cano?
Yeah, I don't think I would. Yeah, if I could draft, you know, with these two games in the books, I don't think I would be that much more aggressive to go after Cano. You know, maybe just, you know, a dollar or two more, but you know, it looked at last year, and you had the first half and the second half, and I just went conservative and didn't want to pay for what I need to pay to get that second half production. But he's picked up where he's left off. I'm still not ready to go all in yet.
Okay. Anything on Dickerson, guys? You know, here's one thing I wanted to say about Dickerson. Just looking at the splits, his batting average at home the last two seasons in Colorado was .363 and .395. On the road, it was .252 and .257. So do you expect Dickerson to be a 250 to 260 hitter with a lot of home runs?
No, I think he'll make adjustments. I still didn't think he was going to be the same hitter that he was in Colorado, and this is kind of a similar situation. Well, he's already got 2 home runs in the trap. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't expect that, but it's still a lot of weird things can happen in a series. So I'm waiting this one out.
Okay, you don't think his power is legit?
I still don't know what to make of him. I mean, he is going to be the ultimate, just whatever it is he provides for you, just be happy with it, because I have no idea how this is going to go. If he will make adjustments and how much that'll improve the batting average, how much his power is going to decline by not playing at Coors Field. I think he's going to be a solid player. I think he's going to be one worth starting in just about every league. But whether that manifests into a, you know, 330 homer type or 280, 25 homer type or a 270, 30 homer type, you know, I don't know. I have no idea how to anticipate this, because there's nothing in the numbers that can tell us how he's going to adjust leaving Coors Field.
Okay, that's Corey Dickerson. So if you're new to the show, or if you just don't remember, It seems like every day we try to do the same segments, you know, not exclusively, but some staples. We have the rotation, which is usually five pitchers, although it ends up being more like four or six a lot of times. And we have three up and we have three down. And then we have the fringy starting pitchers. We talk about the bullpens, things you need to know. But today, so many pitchers to talk about. We have the good rotation of six pitchers and the bad rotation of also six pitchers. So a lot of pitchers here.
Six-man rotations.
Two six-man. Yeah, this is a lot of pitchers. Yeah.
Japanese baseball.
It's wave of the future.
And, yes. Oh, the Japanese baseball. Yeah, we have three Japanese pitchers. Is Wei Yin Chen Japanese?
So they're used to the six-man rotation, right? That's
They are, yeah. They all were bad yesterday, sort of. Where's Wei Yin Chen from? Taiwan. Wei Yin Chen is Taiwanese. Sorry about that. Okay, anyway, let's go to the good rotation and the bad rotation. I'm putting Justin Verlander in the good rotation, despite a 450 ERA, five no-hit innings, and then he gave up a home run, three-run homer, right? No, two-run homer.
Yeah, two-run.
To Giancarlo Stanton. Should have walked him.
Three. Sorry.
Al, why would you pitch to Giancarlo Stanton? I understand you got a runner on first base, but there are two outs and Martin Prado is on deck. Give me a break. You don't pitch to Giancarlo Stanton. You walk him every single time.
I don't know about that. And there was, at that point, I think it was a 5-0 lead.
I think it was 5-1.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. It was 5-1. Yeah. I don't know. I think there are situations with the big lead where you don't walk them. But yeah, this probably was one where Verlander should have gone ahead and done that.
Tigers didn't know how bad their new closer was yet.
Yeah, that too.
I guess. Well, maybe I should just name all these guys since we won't have time to really dive into everybody. But Verlander, Odorizzi did not get the quality start, but he struck out 10 Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, by the way, are striking out like crazy so far. Johnny Cueto, seven innings, one run, four strikeouts at Milwaukee. John Lester, 7 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts at the Angels. Scott Kazmir, excellent start, 6 scoreless, 1 hit, no walks, 5 Ks at San Diego. And James Shields, you know, again, just like Verlander.
Fine.
Yeah, it was good. No home runs, and the strikeouts were there.
I want to see Shields go more innings because that's what really cost him value last year was too many 6-inning starts. So
for first start, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
A lot of guys going five right now.
I guess. You know, the one that really, well, I guess there were two that really made an impression on me was Odorizzi with the 10 strikeouts because, like you said, the Blue Jays have struck out a lot. Archer was one reason for that. They're just, you know, if they continue to do what they have done throughout their career, they're going to be a pretty low strikeout team. So Odorizzi getting 10 strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings against them, you know, that's kind of why I thought his improvements last year were misleading because the strikeout rate went down. So if you can get that back up, maybe we get the best of both worlds for Odorizzi. And then Kazmir, it was just such a downer spring with the velocity not looking so great at times. And I was scared to draft him in a mixed league, even though it was going to be a low cost, but he has been a good, a guy who pitches great for the first 3 or 4 months of the year and then fades down the stretch. That's how kind of how the last 2 years have gone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd be happy to own him now.
Yeah.
When it looks like he's off to a good start again.
Yeah. Just to back up a couple things Scott said, the Blue Jays don't strike out a lot, even though they have so far. They had the seventh fewest strikeouts in baseball last year, and they have a pretty similar lineup. And Kazmir, first 22 starts of 2015, 2.12 ERA. First 21 starts of 2014, 2.37 ERA. So, yeah, he's been great, and then he's horrible in basically August and September. What did you think about Verlander? I wasn't blown away, but I certainly wasn't discouraged.
I was pretty blown away when
you
he
were?
Had the no-hitter through five.
I thought his changeup looked pretty good.
Yeah, and he was getting a lot of disparity in velocities with his different pitches.
Yeah,
he was just pitching really well. So even with on 90-mile-per-hour fastballs, he was getting a lot of deception.
Oh yeah, so that velocity is.
I mean,
it's not great.
I mean, he was even hitting higher than that.
Oh but yeah, so no,
even,
it wasn't
even
that
the fastballs
bad.
That weren't 92, 93. You know, we're really fooling hitters.
So his average fastball velocity, according to Brooks Baseball, was just under 92. It was about 93.5 last year.
At the same time?
First start, and that's not unusual for them to be down. Max velocity was 94.5, and usually he's up over 99. I don't know. I didn't actually see the start, and you did.
It's been a while though since he's thrown 99. No.
No. I guess I'm looking at the year by year breakdown as opposed to game by game. So it's just at one point last year he hit 99.97 with his fastball.
That's fair. But no, I thought he looked really good through five. I don't know what exactly happened there in the sixth. Maybe fatigue. But overall, an encouraging start. That was much better than the line would make it look.
Okay. Bad rotation now. Corey Kluber. Michael Wacha. 10 hits, dude. Come on. Masahiro Tanaka. Tanaka actually wasn't really that bad. He could not get through six. 5 2/3. 4 hits, 2 runs. One of the runs probably shouldn't have scored. Aaron Hicks made a bad play on a Jose Altuve double, should have been an out, and Correa ended up driving him in. Iwakuma, again, not terrible, but 6 hits, 3 walks, and 5 innings, 5 strikeouts, 2 runs at Texas. Shelby Miller was bad. It was all in one inning, gave up 6 runs in 1 inning. He ended up giving up a total of 6 runs in 6 innings, gave up 3 homers, though. And Wei-Yin Chen, who doesn't quite fit with the other five, but is 85% owned. Wei-Yin Chen got hit by a comebacker, and then he gave up 4 runs, and then he sort of settled in, gave up 5 runs in 5 innings on 9 hits. But anyway, I said Kluber, Wacha, Tanaka, Iwakuma, Miller, and Chen. Anybody stand out to you?
Not in terms of a value changing thing. Iwakuma, I thought, pitched better than the line. He looked pretty good. Chen, of this group, he's probably the lowest ceiling one, so he's the one you'd be less concerned about anyway. But I think that comebacker really impacted him. The velocity was down. He just wasn't as good after that.
What about Wacha? Because I know you were kind of down on him relative to at least me and maybe Heath too.
Yeah. I expect him to be better than this.
Yeah.
So, definitely be on watch for that. But, just about any first start, I'm going to not take too seriously.
Kluber, I just want to point out, obviously 9 hits in 5 1/3 innings is not good, but he had a couple starts last April, a 13-hit outing followed by a 10-hit outing. And obviously, aside from win-loss record, of course, turned out okay. So I'm not too worried about this for him either.
I've noticed a couple things so far in watching all this baseball. I want to know if you guys noticed the same thing. Really, the first thing, the strike zones seem pretty tight. I feel like these pitchers are getting squeezed. I don't know if anybody else has noticed that. Have you?
I've noticed it a bit. I think I've heard comments on it more maybe than I've even noticed it myself.
Really?
A lot of people seem to be pointing that out.
Oh, good. I don't feel crazy then. Man, I've been watching the Pirates a lot, and Gregory Polanco is just looking great so far.
Yes.
He's happy.
He's crushing the ball.
Richer man now.
On that subject, Adam, if we have a moment.
Yeah.
I actually wrote an article yesterday, the 5 players who I think could come closest to something resembling AJ Pollock. I didn't want to go as far to say as they could be AJ Pollock, but that same ability to help in the several categories that Pollock does. And Gregory Polanco was one of the 5, in part because I agree with you. I think he just looks better this year. He's hitting the ball. I mean, again, it's 2 games, but when he has made contact, he has scorched the ball. I know both of his hits in the opener, a single and a double, both had the exit velocity that you normally see on a home run. So I take that as a good sign. And he's still just entering his mid-20s, so I think he has room to improve as a power hitter. I think he had I can't really say he had bad BABIP luck because it was around 300, but I think with his speed and up-the-middle approach, it could be closer to 330, so he could get that batting average up over 280, especially if he hits 15-plus home runs, and we know he can steal some bases. So Polanco, I'm starting to come around to him as a breakout candidate. Kind of late, I guess, but you could still maybe get him for a fairly affordably in a trade.
Yeah, he crushed a ball off the wall yesterday too. So he's locked in right now. And look, if we don't, we're not trying to make too much of early stuff, but we want to have something to talk about, right? So let's go. I just wanted to give us some lineup stuff out. Ben Paulson, He did not start. I didn't even notice this. He didn't start the first game against the righty, Zach Greinke. Mark Reynolds started instead, but Paulson was in the lineup yesterday. Jimmy Rollins and Jed Lowrie both had good games yesterday. Both are shortstop eligible. Both bat second in their orders. Rollins for the White Sox, Lowrie for the A's. Who would you rather have, and I guess do you really want either of them?
I would rather have Lowrie. Yeah, I didn't draft either one in a whole lot of leagues. In fact, I didn't draft Rollins in any. But, you know, they're part of that mix of potential late round shortstops. I mean, there's just so many of them, it's kind of hard to distinguish. If nothing else, I figure Lowrie probably has the better job security because I figure Rollins is just keeping the seat warm for Tim Anderson.
All right. Adam Lynn sat against a lefty. He did not sit against a lefty in the opener, but maybe because it was opening day. Daeho Lee got the start for the Mariners. Colton Wong sat against a lefty. Jed Jerko started at second. He homered. And Aledmys Diaz started at shortstop and went 1-for-3. Wong entered as a pinch hitter. Diaz made a bad error, though, so that's something to look at.
Have him in there for his glove, and then he goes making errors.
Then Zobrist batted fifth against the lefty after batting third against the righty on Monday. I'm not going to sit here and tell you about Joe Maddon's lineup every day. I'm making that commitment right now. Can't
good
do call. It.
You missed the biggest note on Joe Maddon's lineup.
Jorge Soler?
No. Kyle Schwarber was not in it.
Oh.
Against the left-hander. And Andrew Heaney was the left-hander, so, you know, it's not like he's David Price or something. And that was even with Jorge Soler already in the lineup because they had the DH. Max Caesar actually started in place of Schwarber and hit a home run. Well, so I guess kudos to Maddon, but that's not a good development for Schwarber owners.
I think there might be a reason why Matt Caesar started. And I don't know if this was sort of said tongue-in-cheek or not, but he went to Villanova. And Maddon said something about, like, how poetic is that, you know? Like, Villanova wins a championship, and then he goes out and hits a homer. And I kind of felt like that was the reasoning behind it. And any other manager in the world, I would think there's no way that's the reasoning.
But Joe Maddon, it could be.
Maybe.
So just, I don't know. But, yeah, actually, that's a good call, Scott. And did not catch that. Keep that in mind. And Tyler White did not start against the righty. Marwin Gonzalez did, and White came in and pinch hit.
I'm not sure that's going to be a strict platoon there. I think maybe just more of a timeshare between Marwin Gonzalez and Tyler White. And, of course, he's day-to-day now. So White was supposed to start on Wednesday. I'm going to guess he's not.
All right, we got 4 minutes left, guys. Emails or DFS? We can do both.
Jeez.
They do emails. They got a whole DFS podcast.
Oh, good point.
Okay, fine. I'll give out just a few pitchers. Kenta Maeda, 7,200 at San Diego. He's interesting to me. I don't know how I feel about Patrick Corbin. I think the Rockies have some great lefties, and maybe Corbin can neutralize them, but I'd probably avoid him the way Colorado's hitting. And Juan Ocasio against St. Louis is interesting. Also, yes or no, Freddie Freeman against Steven Strasburg. He owns Steven Strasburg. He has a career OPS over 1,300 against Strasburg.
Nope, at least in a tournament, I'm all about Darren Ruff today.
Really? 2,200?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Lefty killer against Brandon Finnegan.
And Adrian Gonzalez is 11-for-32 with 4 home runs in his career against Andrew Cashner. You could look at him. And Carlos Rodon. I like Rodon against the A's, guys. The A's were struggled against lefties last year. So far, have struggled against two lefties. Rodon held lefties to a 524 OPS in 2015. Rodon's 8,500. You feeling that?
I'm feeling that you just really wanted to talk about DFS, and I don't know why you left the decision up to us.
Well, because now we have time for emails.
Okay. All right. Great.
Let's see, from Andrew, is in a weekly head-to-head 12-team categories league. Do you think his starting pitchers are good enough? 12-team categories. Stroman, Carlos Martinez, Pineda, Severino, McHugh, Joe Ross, Jason Hamill, and Giolito.
A lot of good 2-3-4s in there. Mm-hmm. I don't really see an ace. I guess it could be Carmart.
Yeah, I'd be wanting to let that ride for now. If it turned out not enough of these Severino, Pineda, Joe Ross types were going to amount to anything this year, then maybe I'd look to make a trade, but I think it could turn out okay for you.
Ramon from the Heights is a Trevor Story owner, also a Jung Ho Gong owner. He's been offered Matt Moore straight up for Trevor Story. Who would you rather have?
I'd
rather have Story.
Yeah, I think maybe that's where the change in value comes into play, because I still like Matt Moore. I still have him as a breakout this year. I would have drafted him over Story, but my opinion has changed enough to take Story now.
You can ask us that question tomorrow when we break down Matt Moore's start today against the Toronto Blue Jays.
I'm going Moore, definitely.
From Richard Punch. He's been offered Nolan Arenado for his Madison Bumgarner. Would you make that deal? He has Bumgarner, Keiko, Carrasco. Oh, come on. You have Keiko, Carrasco, and Bumgarner, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nothing against Bumgarner, but you're talking about a first rounder there in Arenado.
From Luke, I was looking at my rosters. AJ Pollock taking up a valuable bench spot. No DL. And would you drop AJ Pollock in a league with no DL?
I really don't want to. I guess maybe the ultimate litmus test would you drop AJ Pollock for Aaron Sanchez if you felt that was your only choice, the only player you could justify dropping? And,
not after one start. No way.
It's going to measure in months, this absence for Pollock. I don't know that anybody pick him up if you dropped him.
In a league with no DL?
I'll say no, like Al, but and that's a tough one.
Okay. And finally, guys, Chip was offered Steve Cishek and Jeremy Jeffress for Sean Tolleson in a 5x5 roto league. Would you give up Tolleson for Cishek and Jeffress?
I would not, because I'm not even really counting Cishek as a closer. I think he's probably the most vulnerable closer. I mean, we've got some kind of, committee type situations, but in terms of somebody who is the clear closer, I think even he's on a par with Rodney, maybe even worse.
Okay. Fellas, thank you very much. Sorry about the shortened show, but we got a lot of stuff in.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. It was pithy.
And also, don't start Yasiel Puig. He's 2-for-19 with no extra base hits against Andrew Cashner.
You and the DFS.
Yeah.
You can't even play.
I love this stuff, man. I really do. All right, play
you
on FanDuel.
Keep score by hand. Like, how would I have done if I could play?
Oh, me, yeah.
The New Yorker that I am.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. It sucks. I miss it. But I got to let you go. So for Al Melchior and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.